Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few Black-owned radio stations, and you're live with the best mind in Black America, me, Sean Williams, and this is the Cutting Edge Show. This evening, I will be discussing the myth of Black inferiority. Racism and discrimination is woven into the fabric of America. We as a race can no longer sit on the sidelines, watch, and do nothing when our people are being brutalized, terrorized, and murdered for having black skin. We have to save ourselves. We have to find solutions to our own problems. Propaganda was highly effective in the brainwashing and stereotyping of our people. The media's negative portrayal of black people showed us as inferior and portrayed white people as superior. Negative attributes were attached to the entire black race. Now, if you have any questions or comments, dial 516-531-9540.
Hello.
Do you have a question or comment?
Well, I have a comment on what your topic. No.
Okay.
I don't think we are inferior to them. And as you said, we are conditioned to believe that by the things that they do to us and how they make us sort of succumb to what they want from us. But if black people get smart, not only if they can read the information, they leave a whole lot of information out of the equation because they don't teach us about ourselves. And that's the problem. We really don't know who we really are. And that's why they can get away with it. But when you know who you are and where you came from, and how we built this country for them, there's no way that we should even begin to think we're inferior to them. And they're always trying to eliminate us from this earth. That should in itself let them know that we are somebody and they are afraid of us learning who we really are. Did you hear me?
So what? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, so what do you think we need to do?
First of all, when I mean say educate, I don't mean all this formal education in their school system. I think or either we need to make sure that our children growing up now know who we really are and what we have contributed to this country. A lot of kids don't even know. And I think that's a lot of reason we have problems in the world because they make us feel like we're nobody. And they did that when they take you from your homeland, destroy your language. You are not going to know who you are unless someone steps in, and they cannot teach us our history because what they have as our history is a lie. We need to be taught black history. I learned black history in an all-black school from people who lived part of that history. So I knew a lot about who I was before I ever got in an integrated school system where they had only put in what they wanted you to know, and that was being a slave. They didn't tell you about Eli Whitney, really, and how much he did for this world by the inventions he made. And there's a lot of inventions. Black kids don't really know that blacks did contribute a lot to this country. Not only did they build it, but they made inventions on their own. And we need to just get all this information out here. And when you know something, it's just like when you do something fantastic, it makes you feel good and better about yourself. And that's the same way blacks will feel about themselves if they know who they really are and stop letting the white population and media tell them who they are. We should know without them saying a word.
That would be actually kind of hard, knowing exactly who you are, since slavery separated families. You could only go back so far.
Not necessarily, but here's what I'm saying. By word of mouth, that stopped. Older people a long time ago told their history, and somewhere that left us. By word of mouth, we knew who we were. And that some of that's in books, and it might be different, but the same scenario from one person to the other. But we can take it up right now with the information that we already have to know that we don't have to be inferior to nobody. That's a mindset what they conditioned us to believe, that we're nobody. But it's been proven, shall I say, who we are. And we have the same chance, almost as they do, on whether we believe what they say or believe of the truth that are out there.
Well, I agree that our history needs to be taught by us to our children, our families, and anybody else, because they already proved who they are.
Their
they showed
story.
Us who they are. I believe who they are. And exactly, just like in history books, is his story. And they write it from their perspective and lie like they've always done. And unfortunately, when our kids go to their schools, that's what they're taught. So we do have to take responsibility and teach our own children the truth. And get rid of that negative stereotypes that they're always putting on us. And also, there had to be an act passed called the Crown Act of 2019. It was a bill that prohibits discrimination based on a person's hair texture or hairstyle. And if that style of texture is commonly associated with a particular race or national origin. Specifically, the bill prohibits this type of discrimination against those participating in federally assisted programs, housing programs, public accommodations, and employment. So, the United States is so racist that black people in certain areas and certain places could be discriminated against from you wearing their own natural hair. And the only that adopted the Crown Act of 2019 was California, New York, New Jersey, Maryland, Virginia, Colorado, and Washington. Okay, 5073, do you have a comment or a question?
You know, I didn't know that they had to have a law passed where I could wear my hair any way I wanted to, because by being in Illinois, that does not affect me. But, you know, when you find out information like that, it's up to black people to come out of the closets and fight for their rights as given to everybody else. And when they wrote the Constitution, black people were not included in it. They never thought that black people would become free ever. That's why they put in it, all men are created equal. But that did not include black people, because they were slaves at the time, and they never thought that they would be anything other than slaves. So that right there should have been enough, instead of having to pass a law to get a freedom like anyone else had.
I totally agree. Okay, and I have a question for the listeners. So if you want to answer this question, I'm going to give the number first. 516-531-9540 and press 1. Do you believe that hypersexualized behavior is legitimate and necessary to make it in this society as a young black person?
Can you repeat that question?
Do you believe that hypersexualized behavior is legitimate and necessary to make it as a young person in this society?
You might have to explain that one to me. Then I can answer.
Okay. Okay. I'll give you an example. Some rap videos are highly sexualized. The women have naked, showing a lot, doing things on there. Because evidently there's a lot of people who think that's what they need to do to make it in this society. So
that's called freedom of expression.
Okay. Does anyone else have any comments or questions?
It's also called selling ourselves out for a dollar when we don't really have to. I think we're intelligent enough that there are other avenues that we could, you know, do. Except,
okay,
you know, like stepping real low.
Okay. 1139, do you have a comment or a question?
As far as the question you just asked, you know, my comment to that would be, you know, I don't think that, you know, a person has to be hypersexualized or anything of that nature. I think there's several different avenues and things that people can do that has nothing to do with sex. At the same time, I would caution people to ignore, you know, the value of sex. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, sex sells, right? And, you know, it throughout, regardless of what history or regardless of, you know, what time period you want to look at, you know, that's always been the case. You know, there's always been, you know, sexual workers, as you want to call them, or whatever the case may be. I mean, you have, you know, the Playboy Bunny that made, you know, millions and millions of dollars off of that, right? At the same time, I will always say I would never want that to be the first avenue, or even in an avenue that, you know, I see my child take in general. But at the same time, if that's what their passion is, you know, I can't really hold them back. But I believe it's on us as parents, you know, not just to teach, but, you know, come to action. You know, I know I was listening to Nicola before, and I agree with a lot of stuff she says. But one of the things that I would also say is, like, you know, we have to be able to come to action. You can't just be educate, 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 you know, because as long as, you know, you're talking to some, as long as you're the party that doesn't have the power, as long as you're the people who are requesting, you're always going to be in the same boat, you know. And it's not until the people who have the power are no longer in power, you know, it's not until then that things actually change. And so, I mean, that was my comment on that. I didn't hear the first question you asked, but based off that question, that's my comment.
Okay. 5240, do you have a comment or a question?
Yes, hello, you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
No, I just think tonight is a good conversation, but I just think that like the last caller said, as long as you're living, long as history before the time, you know, it's going to always be sex objects. And nowadays, a lot of times, you know, with the younger generation, they don't want to work as hard. They don't want to go and get it. Technology is making it easy so you can prostitute from home and do other stuff. So I know this personally from a friend of mine who got, you know, some young daughters. Young daughter start getting online with a Twitter account, Instagram or something, that her cousin and somebody else, and all in early 20s, and they're making money. And one of them working at Burger King part-time, but got a lot of money from older gentlemen, and they think that's the life. And then you got a lot of simp men who online, running behind women, ready to pay women, and women saying, okay, I can make easy money. I ain't really got to do nothing. I can just show you, you know, dance, show you some pictures, or do some stuff, and men send money in. That's why they got OnlyFans account. And the two young ladies, they got them and love it. They call men simps. They call men weak and all that because men have no standards. You know, along with sex and women, men going to run to it. I mean, you know, I have when I was younger. I ain't going to lie. You know, I'm not going to sit on the radio station like I never did because that would be a lie. You know, and I had my fair share in the club spending money, a little bit of tricking. So, yeah, but my thing is as I got old, I realized, oh, I mean, I don't really need it, you know, but I'd like to enjoy myself sometime, you know. And as a man, sometimes I didn't have no feeling for the female. I just wanted what I wanted. So whatever it cost sometime, I went ahead and put them few dollars on that, and I went my way, she went her way. But like I said, as I get older, and I learn, but as long as you're on the internet, you're going to have a lot of men, and, you know, with the way the society, people losing jobs, and think about it, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, you know, a young generation woman, she looking at Cardi B, she looking at all these other rappers doing that, and men love it, and so now they get online, and then not only that, you got women paying for women's service now. So it's not. So a lot of times, you know, you can do stuff behind closed doors and still get money for women, but women paying for women, men paying for women, so, you know, then they get a big ego and all that. And, you know, then a lot of women feel empowered, you know what I mean, when they get all that attention. And it's just attention, really, you know what I mean, it's just attention. The same women 5, 10 years from now ain't going to be married, ain't going to have nobody to love, they're just going to get ran through. But you can't tell them that. But my thing is I think education is still good for the young generation, whether it's male or female. I think education is the first one, so you can be independent, and you can. I think education is better for African Americans. But like you said, people got their own mind with technology. People gonna do what they want to do. Like the gentleman said, you know, if you got daughters, and even mine, they gonna make my own. They gonna make their own decision about what they want to do. I can just teach your kids, but you gonna make their own decision. And you know, I know parents. Not many, but one or two, like, okay, daughter stripping, but she didn't come from the suburbs, but that's something when they grow up at 19 or 20, that's something they want to do. But like I said, that's my take on it. Man. People going to do what they want to do, and technology making it easy for young women, you know, to make money.
Okay, thank you. 8121, what's your comment or question?
I think that the question was about do these women have to be hypersexualized in order to be successful? I definitely don't think it's the only way to become successful, at least temporarily, but it seems to be the one that is working the fastest. That's when the other person commented about the OnlyFans accounts, which are subscription accounts that people go and post pictures, They can post any type of content, but the ones that are making the most money are the ones that are posting sexual content, whether it's nude pictures, videos, those type of things, and those are the things that are making people the most money the fastest. And when people see that, if I can jump over here, I don't have to necessarily work as hard. I can just look a certain way or show certain things and reach this arbitrary goal faster, then that's the way that they're going to do it. And the only thing that's going to prevent somebody from being in that, from going that way is what they learned at home, is their education, is their spirituality, because there are people that absolutely wouldn't do that. But if you don't have a lot of those inhibitions, you're going to be more likely to open yourself up, and the more you see it, then the more commonplace that it is, the more likely you are to do it. So it's definitely not the only way. It's not the best way, but it seems to be the one that's successful because that's the one that is selling, and it's always sold. People will pay money for all types of things, and they just make it highly, highly accessible now that you don't even have to. You can be doing it at home behind your closed door. So that's my comment.
Thank you for that comment. And down the line, I want to ask another question.
Mm-hmm.
Are Black people conditioned, do you think, to see themselves as powerless?
Are Black people conditioned to see themselves as powerless? I would say no. I think that Black people are conditioned to see themselves being victimized in some ways and oppressed. I think that a lot of people can speak to that, feeling oppressed and discriminated against, but actually feeling, well, I'm sorry, what was the word you used?
Conditioned to see themselves
conditioned.
As powerless. Yes.
Not powerless is a different. I don't know if I would agree with that. That people feel like they're conditioned to feel powerless. I think it's more so when that you're going to be oppressed. That you already are. You have to work twice as hard or three times as hard to achieve the same thing. So you're not going to be evenly competing with other people. You're not going to be, if you and I start in the same place, if I'm Black, then I'm already behind. So I have to work much harder in school. I have to work much harder at in my job in order to have the same things that other people have. But I don't know if that's perceived as being helpless or weaker or, you know, anything in that realm.
Okay. Well, thank you. 1139, do you have a comment?
Yes. Just to kind of piggyback a little bit off of that, you know, I wouldn't say that, you know, we're conditionalized to, you know, to feel powerless. But what I will say is, you know, we are conditionalized not to be organized, you know, and also we are conditionalized, you know, to value ourselves more than the greater good. And the reason why I say that is because a lot of times, you know, when you look at, I mean, just taking from my own family and like my own personal situations and things of that nature, you know, it's like we could be so much farther, but it's just like we're arguing, we're fighting with each other. And, you know, it's like, well, why come I can't do nothing and get it off? And it's like, not saying that all Black people or anything like that, you know, feel that manner, but I feel like it is common, you know, to, you know, try to take the, you know, the easy way. And it's like, you know, we have to do on our end, you know, better at, you know, understanding business in general, how business works. But two, working as a team, not using the crab effect. When I say the crab effect is what I mean by that, why crabs can't, you know, escape from the bucket is because as soon as one get up, there's another crab pulling it down, you know. And I feel like we as people in general, you know, to really evolve and to, you know, take away the powers that be, you know, I think that's something that has to happen, you know, that we cannot continue
to, you know, put ourselves in, or live our lives in a manner of, it's like, you know, always wanting an easy way out, or, you know, thinking that, you know, how can I just get this easy money? You know, I think the foundation that we build, you know, just like any building, is the most important thing, you know, because a structure is only as strong as its foundation. And a lot of that, you know, you can see examples in that. You know, you see examples when, you know, some black-owned business, not all, you know, but you see some black-owned business where it's like the hours are all weird. You know, it's like, all right, you know, we're open from 10 to 12, then we're closed, and we're open back up from, you know, 3 to 4, and it just be all weird. You know, it's like, well, in your business plan, in your business model, you know, why did you choose that? You know, well, I want my lunch here, and I want this here, and I want that. I'm like, that's not business, you know. And realistically, it's like, once we're able to get the business going to a function where it can operate without us, you know, it's like you get all that time back. You know, you can think about bigger picture. But we're so concerned with the right now and the immediate payoff that, you know, we overlook the bigger picture a lot of the times. And so I don't think that we're powerless. I mean, growing up in school, for me, you know, I grew in the schools that I went to, it was predominantly white. You know, when I first started school, I started school in Chicago, you know, kindergarten, first grade. When I came to Paducah, you know, second grade, predominantly black. But once I switched, once I got to third grade, from that point on, you know, it was only a handful of black people in the district, you know. And from what I've seen growing up, you know, a lot of white people are scared of black people simply because you're black, you know. So I don't think that's, you know, powerless. I think that, you know, we feel that we have, you know, physical power to handle the here and now and the right now. But I think that we have to be able to, you know, look long term and not just focus on the here and now and making those sacrifices to really uplift not just ourselves but our whole family. And I think the only way I've seen it successfully happen is when the whole family is working together, when the whole family, you know, say, hey, this is our goal, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to work in unison, this is going to be our leader, we're going to, at the end of the day, this is who has the ultimate say-so, this is going to be our council, this is going to be our board, you know, and this is how we're going to move forward together. I think that's what's most important.
Okay, thank you. 1233, do you have a comment or question?
I think that person's phone got cut off. I think they're trying to call back in.
Okay,
so I do have Well, are black people responsible for the economic decline?
You asking me?
You can answer next, but I want 8121 to answer this one, and then you answer after her.
I think that black people are responsible for their own personal economic situation. Absolutely, you have control over what you do with your own money. Unfortunately, sometimes there's a long generational history of not doing the proper things with your money, because many, many people aren't taught about savings, about the importance of credit, about investments, about, you know, diversifying, you know, stocks, bonds. Many, many people are not taught about that. So, you know, it's just about, okay, you work, you wait till you get your check on this day, and then you spend your money on your bills, and then whatever else, maybe purchase things that have no value. You know, you spend so much money on clothes and shoes and those things, and then it becomes this vicious cycle, and you turn right around, and then you want these people that are living check to check. So I think that people are responsible for that, because at some point you have to take, even if you weren't taught those things, you have to you have to set some type of goal and want more for yourself, whatever it is. And if you don't know about it, information is wide open. You can find out about it, and you can learn about all those things that you may not have been taught about, the importance of having multiple streams of income and having your own business and,
you know, there's so many different things, and so you won't have this repetitive generational curse of people always living check to check. But that's what you choose to do with your own money. But I think it starts off so early with just not even knowing anything about money and how to handle it. So overall, what's going on, everything trickles down. Politically, tax laws and all those things, you're not responsible for those things. And when it comes down to what you're doing with your own money, definitely are responsible for that as an adult and for what you teach your children about the value of money and how to handle it. So, yeah.
Okay, so do you think a lot of it, that paycheck to paycheck, is because of instant gratification? Like they just have to have it now and don't want to wait?
I just think some people just don't know any other way. It's like, okay, I get paid on Friday. You know, everything is okay. Well, I get paid on this day, and when I get paid, this is what either I'm going to have to go pay these bills, and some people don't even do that, or this is something I want to buy. I've been wanting these shoes, or I want to go to this restaurant, or it's out of habit. If you don't know any better, or you don't think beyond that Friday, then you're going to be in a habit of always spending your money that way. It's more going out than coming in, and you don't have anything saved up. Some type of emergency happen, you would be completely you'd be in a bad way because you don't have anything. And with COVID-19 and everything happening this year, I think a lot of people have been reminded of that greatly because so many people lost their jobs, hours are reduced, so much has happened, and even businesses, where businesses have folded, there are businesses that went out of business and they're not coming back. And all of that's because they don't have any residual income, they don't have any savings, and people realize, dang, you know, I had employment, but I'm poor. If I'm having to wait to this check, and when I get the check, or even before you get the check is already spent, it's already gone, you're not rich, you're poor. But I think that's just, it's a habit of just spending your money that way and we're constantly trying to dig ourselves out of these monstrous holes, you know, these financial depths of just all this debt and sometimes you can't see your way out of that. So I think, you know, people spend their money like it's a habit, and they're just constantly trying to dig themselves out of a hole, and a lot of people aren't able to.
What age do you think people should start teaching financial responsibility to their children? That's if they know about financial responsibility themselves.
Is it the same day that you teach them how to count? When you have the little fake money and the little fake coins, and you show, okay, this is a $5 bill, this is 25 cents, that same day. If they're old enough to understand how to count money, and you know you have to store with them, okay, it's $9.50. What are you gonna give the man, and how much you should get back? Then all of those lessons and money should go hand in hand. And if you're giving money for doing chores or whatever you have going on, okay, do you go take their, okay, well, mommy, I want to spend my money. So you take the money, you spend all the money you have, or are you conditioning them that you need to save a certain amount of money every time you get money? You should never be spending everything in your piggy bank. Like, those lessons should be very, very early on. But as soon as they learning how to count, that all should go hand in hand, in my opinion. All
right. I agree. Does anybody else have a question or comment? Dial 516-531-9540 or press 1. Does anybody else have a comment?
I have a comment to, you know, the
okay.
First and second question you asked.
Okay.
So, like, first off, you know, do I think black people are responsible for the economic situation that they are in now? I say yes and no. As far as the no portion of it, I think that we cannot overlook, you know, our history and, you know, where we come from. Like, we cannot overlook, you know, redlining and gerrymandering. We cannot overlook the heritage that is passed down, you know, of wealth you know, to the next family. I have a friend, and she, I mean, she's not, you know, rich or anything like that. But like one of the things she was talking to me about was that she was like, I actually have an inheritance. I didn't even realize, you know, how big that is. And it's just like having something to pass down to your kids at the end of the day, that builds up over generation over generation. So I think, you know, we as people, you know, we have to look at our lives unselfishly. I think that a lot of times because we grow up in such harsh environments, because we are a product of our environments, you know, and a lot of times we grow up with such harsh environments that we're like, okay, what about me? You know, what am I getting out of? What about me? What about me? What about me? And a lot of times I feel like what we need to do, you know, is take that focus off of what about me and, you know, really put it on the generation that come. You know, I think that's extremely important. And just to agree with the callers before this as well, is like what we do with our own money, at the end of the day, we are ultimately responsible for what we do with our own money, you know. But at the same time, you know, education, you know, brings in a lot of money. Just knowing tricks to the trade, you know, can make you a lot of money. If you knew that, hey, if I took $1,000 here and set it here, that $1,000 is going to become $5,000 next year, you know, or I'm going to get a 28% return on this investment here. You know, or by signing this paperwork this way, you know, it alleviates the risk. I think those things, you know, those are not our fault if we're not taught those things. You know, if we don't know, then we don't know, and we can't be faulted for what we don't know, you know. But at the same time, we do have to take responsibilities for the things that we can choose. And that just goes back to my initial, you know, when I initially started talking about, you know, how we conduct ourselves and how we conduct our business. As far as when, you know, money or financial literacy should be taught, I think it should be taught at birth, you know, like at all times they should see us, our children, you know, should see us, you know, practicing these things, because when they see us practicing it, if they only see us see the hard work and don't see any of the payoff, then they don't understand why, you know. But when they see the hard work and then they see the payoff as well, you know, it starts to make more sense. You know, I have nephews, you know, right now, like my sister, you know, she has four kids. She has two nephews going into high school that sleep in the same room in the same twin bed, and they're both in high school. It's like, you know, they're already, you know, messed up in the head from the in private situations they're living in, you know. But at the same time, those same kids come and see their uncle and say, well, this is how Uncle JJ is living. You know, this is what he's doing. I mean, his lifestyle seemed a whole lot better here. And by them seeing, you know, he put in all this work to do this, to do that, you know, it gives them something to look forward to. It gives them a path to follow, you know. And so, like, financial literacy doesn't always have to be, you know, percentage in mathematics, but a lot of it's just talking about hard work and being able just to put something to the side and understanding what this money is for, you know. If you say, hey, I'm putting this money to the side and this money is for this, that's completely fine, whether that's a vacation, whether that's the new PlayStation 5 or the whatever console will come out, or whether that's a new car or a new jewelry or whatever the case may be. I think it's important for us to, you know, teach, and not only teach, but also act in a manner of, you know, this is what this money is for. And at the same time, we always got to make sure that we diversify our own revenue streams. You know, we got to always, like, if I lose my job, what's going to happen? I want to be in a situation where if I lose my job, I don't really care. I'm better off, you know, because I'm diversifying my income streams. Because I got money coming in from here, here, and here. If one of them goes, that's completely fine, because the whole time I'm still looking at new avenues to bring in more income streams. And by our children seeing that, they're going to follow the same path, you know, not necessarily do the same thing that we're doing as parents, but they're going to have the understanding of, oh, okay, I don't need to be on the edge, you know, all the time. You know, I don't need to be living paycheck to paycheck, because I know people who make really good money and live paycheck to paycheck. And the main reason is because they don't know how to handle money. You know, they think, all right, I have, you know, $5,000. That means I'm going to spend $5,000, you know, whereas, like, no, if you have $5,000, you know, How much of that is put into the slot for this? How much of that is put to the slot for this? You know, what is your 6-month plan? What is your 1-year plan? What is your 2-year plan? What is your 10-year plan? You know, like talking about those things, achieving those things, and setting up rewards for yourself when you hit those pinnacles is ultimately what's going to bring you and your family into a situation that you both are, that you all are happy and comfortable with, and not in a slave mindset.
Okay, what do you, and this is for anybody, but also, what do you feel about, or how do you feel about gentrification? And do you believe that black people should be buying the block while they still have the block?
Of course, they should be buying the block. I mean,
so how
I
do you feel about gentrification?
I think as far as gentrification, you know, we got to look at it, you know, things for what it is. You know, my question is, when you look at gentrification, the first question you got to ask why. You know, in D.C., several years back, you know, D.C. was Chocolate City. You know, crack cocaine was throughout all these streets. You know, people were getting left, especially blacks, were getting locked up left and right for smoking marijuana. Now we're here in 2020, and you know, D.C. is no longer Chocolate City, you know, and you see the laws have changed. You know, now you can walk down the street and smoke marijuana right in front of a cop and nothing happens to you, you know. So when you talk about gentrification and you talk about buying a block, I think ultimately, yes, it's, you got to buy, you know, and it doesn't mean buy anything at any price. No, you got to buy smartly. And with that, what you buy, and it comes with power. You know, we got to continue to run for office and make sure we're making changes in our community. A lot of people think, well, I got to move away to get this to happen, or I got to move here, or because I'm here, you know, this can't happen. And it's like, no, that's not true. If you have that mindset, then it becomes reality. But if you have the mindset that you can change things, if you have the mindset that you can do these things, guess what? If you put forth that mindset into action, you'll start to see results. Jay-Z put out in one of his songs, you know, I believe it was like the OJ song, you know, where he was talking about where I'm trying to teach you guys, I forget exactly how he phrased it, but like he was pretty much saying, like, I'm trying to teach you how to rent your money, you know, buy the neighborhood that your mama live in, you know, like he was talking about how he wanted to buy this one building for like $1 million. And then next thing you know, it's now it's worth $25 million. Now look how stupid he looked for not buying that building, you know? So like all of that comes with, but all that comes with is understanding that it's not immediate self-gratification. You're not going to get that profit right now. You're not going to get it next year. Hey, you might not even see it. That might be something that your kids see. You know, and that's another thing in that same song he put out on a painting. You know, they bought a painting for like, you know, $25,000, you know, 5 years later, now that painting is worth $1 million. You know, he's like 10 years later, that painting's going to be worth $10 million. And he's like, I can't wait to just give this painting to my kid. And because that value is going to continue to increase, you know. And so understanding that, one, it's not all about us, that, you know, we are a cog in a wheel. And we got to understand our role and understand our place. And we got, and not saying that, you know, we're not important or we're not special or we're not powerful, but we gotta understand if we're gonna build a machine, you know, that's what a business is. You know, is a machine. It's your money. Is your money machine. You know, if we're gonna build that, we gotta understand where we fit in at and understand our roles. You know, we can't let jealousy, you know, come in and tear down our machine. You know, we can't let our own selfish ambitions, you know, destroy our machine. We have to, you know, work together because at the end of the day, you know, two people can do more work than one. You know, us working together, we're going to go a whole lot farther than it is us working independent.
Okay. Is there any more comments or questions about gentrification and buying a block? Okay, 5240. Do you have a comment or question? Hello? Do you have a comment or question?
You talking to me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, just on gentrification. I don't know which way. I think that we need to buy the block. I do say that we need to buy the block up, but a lot of times we won't. But I think we need to buy the block up. But for gentrification, the thing I don't like about it, because that's the neighborhoods and a lot of cities where African Americans had for years and years. And then when you talk about gentrification, then they go in and they buy the block up, and then they remodel it, and then next thing you know, the blacks on the outside looking in, and then rent real high, and then the same people that you can be in that block for, say you can be in that neighborhood for 50, 60 years, blacks that ran the whole 3-4 blocks, neighborhood still blacks, and then they'll come gentrification it, they'll build it up, make new condos and lofts and stuff like that, and then, you can be raised in a certain house but he knocked down or whatever. You can just walk in that neighborhood and all of a sudden, they'll look out to ride outside dining and nice, it's real fancy where you can't afford to stay there. Then they'll look at you like you crazy when you just ride by. You're looking like, man, my cousin used to stay here or so-and-so used to stay there, but now they're looking at you like, what the hell are you doing over here? And you're like, man, I grew up in this neighborhood. So if we can do it without them doing it, that's good. But gentrification, I know a lot of times it weed out drugs and gangs and all that, but at the same time, they raise the rent that high where we can't afford it no more. Then they look at us like we're crazy, like what we doing right here. You go these Negroes again. So for gentrification, I'm kind of steadfast, and I want to. Hopefully we can do it where we can build our own stuff up. But, a lot of times, and another thing I want to talk about, a lot of times when we're talking about wealth, I know a few African Americans had wealth, but if people left them a house or whatever, but they don't want that house. They don't want to rebuild, or they want to go move somewhere else, and then they'll sell it for little or nothing. And then they'll run through the money and get broke, and now they're renting out their house somewhere and renting out apartment or whatever. And they could have had something they own, and then you could have built upon it. You know what I'm saying? Built upon it. Once you own it, you could have said, I can remodel it. I could have, some people, I've been in this house all my life, and I want something new and all that. Okay, well, your father left you that. He paid for it. Take advantage of it. Nah, somebody don't pay the taxes or whatever, and then somebody else get it and rent it out, and you still, you got the rent. But I had a friend of mine who, that's what happened to him. His grandma left my house and bought the best house, but over a couple, I think 3 or 4 years later with him working overtime, he remodeled the whole house, and he don't own no monthly payment. He says, so now he can go buy that SUV that he wanted, and now he loves it. He took his time, got the roof fixed, did the work little bit by little bit on the weekend when he was off, whatever, at the house, and remodeled it totally, and now it's livable and nice. It was over there a couple weeks ago. But anything, but my thing is that I think the blacks just need to save our money and just do better. That's all I got to say was gentrification. On the part I don't like about it, because they build it up, make it so expensive, and then we just ride by it. They look at us like, what the hell y'all doing? We're like, hey, we used to be in these same neighborhoods. So that's all I got to say.
Okay, thank you for your comment. 5073, do you have a comment or a question?
Well, I somewhat agree about gentrification, but my thing is, if it's by us, and not by somebody else. Because that's what happened in Chicago years ago. All the black people called themselves moving up to the east side by moving out in the suburbs. And what the white people did, they went back in and cleaned up their area. So now, if you don't live within the city limits of Chicago, you can't work there in those city jobs. So sometimes I think we need to build up our own neighborhoods and stop letting other people come in and do it, which we wouldn't own anything anyway. But it's a good thing. Maybe some richer, shall I say, more prominent black people could come in and help move businesses in and give some of the residents jobs in that same neighborhood so they will have more respect for it. Because a lot of times the people in the neighborhood aren't even of your own race or maybe not even from this country. So it can work. I think a lot of people, when they are part of something, they tend to deal with it better than I'm forced to do this because of what somebody else has done or is doing. You know, when you're a part of moving on up, you tend to do a better job and not just being an onlooker at what is happening in your neighborhood. But that's the only way we're going to build up anything is learn how to live where we are and stop tearing things up or down.
Okay, thank you for your comment. 8121, what do you think about gentrification and or buying a lot?
I like what the last young lady just say about learning to live where you are, because the whole purpose of that gentrification is supposed to be making something beautiful, but then you make things so beautiful and then it raises the property value and now people have to move out of the area. And if that's really the point, then it's about getting a certain socioeconomic group out of the area. But wherever you live, it's about you. The property value is about what type of stores are there, how the property is being taken care of, and you could beautify and gentrify your own area, but everybody would have to be on the same page with even caring or understanding the intrinsic value of property and what that does for the prices of homes. But if you're in an area where people aren't buying and it's a lot of rental properties and a lot of gentrification is a multi-layered thing, and some people support it and some people don't. As far as I'm always about making anything look better, but it just kind of goes hand in hand that when you raise the value of property, some people that might have already been originally in the area can't afford it anymore. And if that's your purpose, is to get rid of certain groups of people, then therein lies the bias and the prejudice and the racism within that. But I think there's nothing wrong with people going into areas and fixing things up, but you have to have a community of people that are able to afford to go in and clean up areas, not for the purpose of removing certain groups of people out of the area or running people away, but just providing opportunity for people to live in a beautiful, safe, aesthetically pleasing neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. And does anyone else have a comment or a question about gentrification or buying the block?
I would like to throw one thing in there. Main thing is that one thing I was talking about, like when I talk about family, you know, if the family's working together, you know, at the end of the day, everybody needs somewhere to live. And the main thing that, you know, helps gentrification in a positive manner, I just never really heard gentrification anything in a positive manner. You know, most of the time I hear about gentrification is moving people out that you don't want there, you know, because of whatever prejudice you have against whatever type of people, right? But, like, when you're working together as a team, as a family, you know, I feel like you can gentrify your whole block, you know, when you guys are all on the same page. You know, you're just getting more stuff done because you have more power, because you just have more people. And I think that's what's most important. You know, if, for example, if you have your neighbors and you guys are all on the same page of what you guys want your neighborhood to look like, or what you want your community to be like and things of that nature, you're going to have way more success than, you know, trying to do it all by yourself.
Okay. So do you think there's people should just go and start some kind of like community organization and have a meeting to try to get people on the same page?
Yes, I think a lot of people don't realize, but a lot of that is going on. You know, our city halls, our council hall, city hall meeting, you know, and things of that nature. You know, that's a lot of stuff that goes on. You know, they do, like, the public can talk, you know, and get their voices heard. But I think what's more important than just getting your voice heard is making sure that you have the right person to make the right decision. And I think that's what's most important, is having the right people in a situation where they can make the best judgments and make the best decision, you know, for the community.
Okay, so do you think that if someone was coming in to buy one house and you knew they were going to gentrify, but the other people in the neighborhood hold out and stop it, now how likely do you think they could all come together and clean up their neighborhood?
Well, I mean, like, the way I look at, you know, cleaning up the neighborhood and things of that nature, you know, I look at it, you know, very simple. You know, start with myself. You know, I always say, you know, start at home first, and then spread out. You know, because a lot of people, you know, when you look at, you know, gentrification and cleaning up the neighborhood and this, that, and the other, if everybody took care of their own house, you wouldn't have a lot of issues. You know what I mean? So, like, we got to make sure we're not destroying our own properties. You know, we got to make sure that, hey, we are keeping, as far as the outside of our house, our yard work and things of that nature, up to code and up to maintenance. You know, we got to make sure that as far as the inside, that, you know, we do keep things upkeep. Like, we got to make sure we do have the upkeep of the properties and things of that nature. And then, two, we got to encourage our neighbors to do the same thing. But it's a lot easier to encourage your neighbors to do the same thing when you actually know your neighbors. You know, we're living in a time where we no longer talk to our neighbors. You know, like, where I live at now, I don't know anybody in the building that I live in. And, you know, we live in a nice condo, you know. But at the end of the day, we don't know anyone here. You know, I know back in the day when I was growing up, when I was going to my grandmother's house, we knew every person on that block, you know. And things do become a lot easier when it's your family, if your family, you know, can work together. But, like, when it's your family, you know, making those moves. I know in Paducah, my family, we own three houses on one block, you know. So it's a lot easier for us to all say, hey, we're going to do this, so that way all of our property value is going to raise. You know, by doing this, we all going to make more money. You know, those conversations are a whole lot easier to come to a person and say, hey, you want to know how to make some money? Like, people are going to go, yeah, I want to know how to make some money. Yeah, definitely bring me that information, you know. But as far as, like, gentrification, typically when I say that word, I think negative. And reason why is because typically that is used to, you know, raise prices and raise the value of things to force certain types of people out of the neighborhood, you know, to, you know, not force change always in a positive light. I think it's positive for certain types of people, but at the end of the day, it's like, hey, I want to move certain types of people out, you know. So, like, when I think of, like, you know, gentrification and things of that nature, I think, you know, first off, hey, of course you got to work on your own house and work on your own property and make sure your own stuff is where you want it to be and be the example. And I think if everybody's doing that, then you're going to see a change happen. And I think you got to be vocal about that. And the more vocal you are about that, the more you're going to see other people jumping into what you're talking about.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maw